Hey folks, welcome back to Research and Review, the podcast where we get to discuss research papers with the scientists who wrote them. Toni-Kauschler syndrome is a developmental disorder caused by aberrant neural gene expression linked with a protein called Rex1. Rex1 is tagged for degradation by E3 ubiquitin ligase, which is encoded by a gene called RNF12. Today we'll be looking at the enzyme which regulates this, called the serine arginine-rich splicing kinase, controlled by the serine arginine-rich splicing factor, or SRPK and SRSF respectively. Our guest today will help us understand this complex puzzle and how it all fits together, introducing the fascinating concept of functional diversification. As always, the open access link to the paper can be found in the description. Today's guest received his PhD from the Pontifical Universidad de Chile in cellular and molecular biology. He then went on to undertake his postdoctoral training at the MRC Protein Phosphorylation and Ubiquitination Unit here in Dundee in the lab of Dr. Greg Finlay. He recently received the School of Life Sciences Molecular and Cellular Biology Prize for his paper we're discussing here today. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Francesco Bustos.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you very much for coming on. So we'll start with your undergrad. So where did your interest in biochemistry come from?
I had a very good teacher in school, in high school. So she was a biology teacher, but she actually had a biochemistry degree, and she then decided to go for teaching. A part of what we had to see in class, she managed to show us some science, and especially developmental biology, which was one of the things that motivated me to go for biochemistry. I was also always inclined to intellectual, I thought I was good in anything that required intellectual work rather than other abilities.
Fantastic. And so after you did your PhD, you ended up working at a lot of different labs in Chile, in the States, and in the UK. How do you find it, you know, working all around the world?
Well, it's exciting. I think it's one of the good things about being a scientist, being able to travel around. Well, apart of having worked in those places, I've traveled to conferences all over, very nice places, actually. I think they have things in common, which is that you always find people that's excited about science and passionate, because you need to have some vocation to work on this. But they also have differences. I think the best place so far has been the UK or Scotland specifically, because here you at least have you have the biggest appreciation of a scientist as a real job.
Really?
And you don't find that in Chile or a little more in the US, because here you at least have a contract that you're part of the university, and you don't. And in other places, you are like an associate member, and you depend on fellowships, and you are not really considered as a member of staff of the university.
Fantastic. And when you were applying for these different positions, was Greg Finlay's lab one that you were particularly interested in, or was it one that you weren't sure about but you still applied anyway?
I think it was the best option and the best fit I could find, because my background was in stem cells and in ubiquitin. I did my PhD studying stem cells from the muscle and studying ubiquitin signaling. And then Greg is also interested in stem cells, although they were different types of stem cells, but they all work fairly the same way. And he's very interested in studying signaling, both with studying phosphorylation and ubiquitination. So it was the best fit for me. Although I found in general the unit or the School of Life Sciences very as a very good option for to study what I wanted to study, which was the ubiquitin system.
Fantastic. So move towards the research paper. So what brought you to, you know, conduct your research on when the paper specifically? I noticed how you've previously been involved in a paper about RNF-12 in the past. Was it just kind of a natural progression to investigate SPRK?
Yeah, so when I arrived, the project was to try to identify what's the kinase signaling regulating this E3 ubiquitin ligase. However, when I think a year after I arrived, some papers came out saying that RNF12 was mutated in a neurodevelopmental disease, and we looked at those papers that were much more genetic, and then but they do identify mutations that were present in the patients, and then we decided to analyze what was the consequence of those mutations in activity of RNF12. So we paused a little the project, and then we decided to investigate that. And after that, I continued the research, the original research, because it was at that time it was being a bit difficult. But yeah, I think it's built in the idea of studying RNF12 that what much more importance after this disease was described, I think, in 2017.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Moving on to the paper itself. So the paper we're looking at today is the functional diversification of SRSF protein kinase to control ubiquitin-dependent neurodevelopmental signaling, which is a lot of very big words. But when you sort of look at these words individually, it's not as bad. For example, SRSF stands for serine arginine rich splicing factor, which...
Yeah, so let me explain you a little what SRSFs are. Some factors that regulate the process of mRNA splicing, because you know that there is regulation after mRNA is transcribed in the nucleus. It has to undergo some processing in eukaryotes. And that's regulated by these SRSFs that have RNA binding motifs. So they bind the RNA and recruit the spliceosome. And for that function, they need to be phosphorylated. So then, historically, it's been demonstrated that these kinases, the SRPKs, which are derived from their own name, right? SRSF protein kinases, phosphorylate these factors, and they are important because the phosphorylation of these factors are required for splicing. It does in general. Splicing, when we say splicing, is the whole process in the cell.
And then RNF12, which we've mentioned previously, this, as you said, encodes E3 ubiquitin protein ligase. And then in the paper, you linked the expression of this protein is disrupted. We get a condition called Toney-Kauschler syndrome, or TOCAS. One of the other words in the paper that you mentioned was the functional diversification. Could you explain a bit more what functional diversification means?
Yeah, so in the lab, we are interested in identifying novel kinase signaling or signaling in general by which development is regulated. In the case of kinases, what is surprising is that although in the model that we use, which are embryonic stem cells, you have hundreds of kinases that are expressed, only a few of them have been studied. There are studies around 10 or 15 of them. So we think that many more of those have roles that are important for stem cells and for development. And so we are interested in studying that. And in the case of SRPKs, as they have been described extensively only in this like housekeeping process, which is splicing, right? Because if you don't have SARPKs or don't have SRSF, you don't have splicing and you don't have cells don't survive. But we thought that there could be developmental functions that are independent on that function. So additional functions. And so the functional diversification relates to developing that the molecules or the kinases can develop novel functions throughout the pass from unicellular life to multicellular life. And this is especially true in development, where you cells differentiate to different lineages and during development.
And one thing that you didn't say explicitly in the paper is that within development, it is a process which is in several different steps. So for the action of this kinase, what part of development are we specifically looking at?
Yeah, so we focus on the phenomenon of pluripotency, which is the is a property of embryonic stem cells, and this means that they have the potency or the capacity of differentiate to any cell type in the body, and how that is maintained. So we use the model of mouse embryonic stem cells to study this, and this is the very one of the earliest moments in development where cells are still not differentiated. They are specialized in being these sort of cells that maintain a developmental state, but they haven't chosen what tissue are they gonna form.
Mm-hmm.
Stem cells are very, there is a variety of stem cells, they're very diverse, and they all can have different behaviors. For example, if you have the neural stem cell, it's always been shown that they have different stages. You have the stem cell, like the actual stem cell, and then you have a progenitor, which is much more specialized. And then you have the differentiated cell. But I think it depends on the type of stem cell that we're talking about. In the case of pluripotent stem cells, you don't have those stages, although it's been shown that you may have pluripotent stem cells that are sort of more pluripotent, which are these have been described by a very famous scientist, Austin Smith. He has established this state, and he calls it the naive state. When cells are more able to, or more prone for differentiation.
So for the results of the paper, the first thing that you discovered was that SRPK activity only plays a minor role in serine arginine-rich splicing factor. Were you surprised by this, or was this something you expected?
Yeah, so as I mentioned you there, historically, SRPKs have been always associated to phosphorylate these SRSF factors, and that controls splicing. And if you don't have phosphorylation of those factors, then there is no function. But all those experiments have been done in human somatic cells or cancer cell lines. So you can, so I thought it was wrong to assume that this is conserved in all cells.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have functions that are specific to specific stages or specific tissues. So that's what we tried. I mean, we used this very specific potent inhibitor of SRPKs. And what we see in mouse embryonic stem cells is that you don't see, you see very discrete or very, very low changes in SRSF phosphorylation. And on the other hand, when you use a CLK inhibitor, which is another family of kinases, then you do see a huge decrease in phosphorylation of the SRSFs. And that would mean that in these cells specifically, CLKs are the ones that are phosphorylating the factors and not SRPK as it was described for other cell types.
So another thing that you looked at was RNF12 SR motifs are phosphorylated by SRPK and other CMGC family kinases. And CMGC family kinases refer to a group of kinases, including cyclin-dependent kinase, MAP kinase, glycogen synthase kinase, and CDK-like kinases. Are these kinases linked by function, or is it their genetic makeup?
So yeah, I think that they are similar in how they work in the kinase domain and also how that is structured, because they have similar propensity to bind specific sequences and phosphorylate them. I think the kinase field, and this is because only thanks to years and decades of research that have established this, it's easy to find the motifs that are predicted to be phosphorylated by a family of kinases, because it's been shown or it's been studied. So, and this family, the CMGC family, most of the members require a proline residue to be next to the phosphorylation site in the substrate. Other members are also require arginine in the proximity of the phosphorylation site. So, and looking at the sequence that we find that is phosphorylated in RF12, we saw that it had some arginines and also a proline. So obvious candidates were members of this family, but the family is still really big and it has so many members, and you still have to narrow down to which subfamily and which specific kinase is the one that's doing the job.
Interesting. And when you were looking at these GMC family kinases, you used a kinase panel. What does this panel look like? Do you do them all at the same time as in a physical sheet, or are they individual reactions which you then make into a table?
So, yeah, I have to say that this is the sort of experiment that you can only do in Dundee, okay? Unless you want to spend money like crazy. Because only in Dundee we have here the MRC PPU reagents and services and the International Center for Kinase Profiling. So and that means that we have available purified recombinant kinases that have been characterized, and we know work. We know that they are active, because you can send any inhibitor here and they were tested towards all those kinases. So here what I can do is just order a sample of every kinase, and then I will have it next day and do the experiment.
Wow.
Right? So I just choose representative members of the CNGC family kinases and did the experiment with RNF12. So the only thing that is in the tube is the kinase, RNF12, ATB, and some buffers. So if you see phosphorylation of RNF12 after the reaction, it means that kinase is able to phosphorylate directly RNF12. Okay, and so the experiment is done all at the same time, and the same time of reaction, so you can all the samples are comparable.
And moving on to the sort of the next result about widespread selected RNF12 motif phosphorylation by SPRK, and you investigate this using phosphoproteomic analysis. Could you give us a bit more information about what this type of analysis involves?
Yeah, so we choose to do the phosphoproteomic analysis because, as I mentioned, in the CMGC family, some of them are require a proline and some of them require an arginine. And the SRPKs are known to require arginines. So we didn't know, because we had a repeat, our motif were four sites, four serine sites, and it was a repetition of an RSP sequence, which is arginine serine proline. So we didn't know whether what the phosphorylation that we were looking at in our previous experiment was that the SRPKs were only able to phosphorylate the first site, maybe the one that has, that is next to arginine, and not the one that is next to proline. So the only way to do that is using mass spectrometry. So I first did the in vitro experiment, so using only isolated SRPK with isolated RNF12 and carry on the phosphorylation reaction. So then you can analyze that reaction by mass spectrometry, and don't ask me how, but they can tell you through this technique, mass spectrometry, they can tell you which of those settings are phosphorylated. And we found that all of them are phosphorylated. So the kinase SRPK is not only able to phosphorylate the sites that are next to arginine, but also the site that is next to proline. And that could be against the dogma, you know, because previous evidence showed that these kinases could only phosphorylate arginine or sites that are next to an arginine.
Now we've gone through your paper. So I'd like to ask you about how does the stuff you've done here build on your previous research, and what do you think the results from the research might go on to next?
So I think my research in general has been trying to understand what is the role, or answer one of the key outstanding questions in the field of ubiquitin system, which is what is the role in disease and in stem cells. And so I think my previous work contributed to that a little, but now I think this is the biggest contribution I have made in understanding better how a disease-related enzyme as RNF12 is regulated, because I identify what is the signaling pathway upstream and also how this regulates the expression of neural genes. Mm-hmm. And the next steps, so from here I will be moving actually to take a PI position in a university and develop my independent research. And I will start by working in RNF12, because we still don't know we don't fully know the regulation of RNF12, and to generate therapeutic intervention against these diseases, we need to understand much better what is the signaling involved. And for that, I will start by two projects. The first is identification of what are the substrates of RNF12, what are the relevant substrates in disease, and also trying to develop some biotechnology techniques by which you can generate targeted protein degradation of the accumulated substrates when RNF12 is not working.
Brilliant. And as a PI, will you have more freedom to kind of explore different areas that you wouldn't be able to in your position?
I think I'm pretty free at the moment, because I have a very nice supervisor. But yeah, that's the idea, that you can develop your own ideas, and but you're also responsible for taking decisions, which can be difficult sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a good challenge, and I think I can cope with the the pressure and the difficulties of that, thanks to my experience here in Dundee and in general during my career.
Fantastic. Well, I wish you the best of luck with that, and thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.